Welcome back, Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. We're discussing return to play, and we're asking the tough questions that were maybe asked to this guy. The commissioner of the NHL, Gary Bettman, had a press conference to discuss the NHL's proposed return to play that's been adopted, voted on by the teams, and this is how it sounded.
Good afternoon. I am delighted to be with you today to announce the National Hockey League's plans for our resumption of play, the format of the 2020 Stanley Cup playoffs, and how we will conduct the 2020 NHL draft lottery. Before I get into the details, I want to make clear that the health and safety of our players, coaches, essential support staff, and our communities are paramount. While nothing is without risk, ensuring health and safety has been central to all of our planning so far and will remain so. Let me assure you that the reason we are doing this is because our fans are telling us in overwhelming numbers that they want us to complete the season, if at all possible. And our players and our teams are clear that they want to play and bring the season to its rightful conclusion. Although we are anxious to get back on the ice, we will not do anything until we are assured by medical professionals and the relevant government authorities that it is safe and prudent to do so. I want to thank Executive Director Don Fehr, Special Assistant to the Executive Director Matthew Schneider, and all members of the NHL Players Association, particularly players Ron Hainsey, Connor McDavid, Mark Scheifele, John Tavares, and James Van Riemsdyk, who were part of our joint return to play committee. It took a great deal of collaborative effort to get where we are today, and their insight, input, wisdom, and passion for our game and its traditions were essential to the process that produced the plan I'll now outline. I also want to thank Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly and league staff and medical personnel who worked tirelessly to craft this plan, and the members of the NHL Board of Governors who once again put aside personal preferences to approve a plan that we believe is fair to all of the teams and our best option under the circumstances. It will enable the best playoffs in all the sports to honor our history and produce a champion worthy of claiming the most treasured trophy in all of sports. Now to our return to play plan. When the given go-ahead from the medical experts and the relevant government authorities is given, 24 of our 31 teams will resume play, the top 12 in each conference as ranked by percentage points from our standings as they stood through the games of March 11th when we paused our season as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. The remaining seven teams will enter the draft lottery, which I will discuss in detail later. For purposes of nomenclature, record keeping and NHL awards, the 2019-20 regular season has been deemed to be completed. We will resume play and conduct the 2020 Stanley Cup playoffs in two hub cities that will be identified and announced at a later date. One will be the site for the resuming Eastern Conference clubs. The other will play host to the resuming Western Conference clubs. Each will have secure arenas, practice facilities, hotels, and local transportation for our players, coaches, and essential staff. We expect that our clubs will be permitted to travel a maximum of 50 personnel to their hub city. A very limited number of support staff will be able to access the event level at each venue. A comprehensive system of testing will be in place in each hub city. We are currently in phase one of our pause, during which clubs have been instructed to self-isolate as much as possible and have done so. In early June, we expect to be able to enter phase two, during which clubs can return to their individual practice facilities for voluntary small group on and off ice training. Yesterday, we released a comprehensive protocol that will govern how we will operate in phase two. Phase three of our return to play plan will be the opening of formal training camps. The timing of our entry into phase three again will be determined by guidance from medical and civil authorities. While we are anxious to open camps as soon as possible, we don't envision doing so before the first half of July. Finally, when appropriate, we will move to phase four, in which our participating clubs will report to their respective hub cities and we will resume play. Obviously, we anticipate playing over the summer and into the early fall. At this time, we are not fixing dates because the schedule of our return to play will be determined both by developing circumstances and the needs of our players. For various reasons, we are also not announcing at this time which two cities will serve as our hubs. Things are evolving rapidly, and when we decide on locations, we want it to be on the best available information at the time that we need to make that determination. In the meantime, I can say we have narrowed the choices to a number of cities that as of today include Chicago, Columbus, Dallas, Edmonton, Las Vegas, Los Angeles, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Pittsburgh, Toronto, and Vancouver. There are no shortage of candidates that can help us do this. Again, the final determination will depend on COVID-19 conditions, testing availability, and government regulations. The top four teams in each conference will claim automatic berths in the first round of the playoffs. They will play intra-conference round robins, each playing the other three teams to determine their respective seeds in the first round. These games will be played with regular season overtime and shootout rules, with ties in the final standings broken by regular season points percentage. The remaining eight teams in each conference will play in best of five qualifying round series to determine which four in each conference advance to the first round of the playoffs. The matchups for these series, again, are based on points percentage at the time of the pause. These games will be played with playoff overtime rules. Once the round robins and qualifying rounds are completed, we will conduct conference-based playoffs in each hub city. The winners of the qualifying round robins will advance to the first round with each opposing one of the round robin teams. Since we have endeavored to be sensitive to players' preferences, the matchups for the first round series remain to be set as the return to play committee is still discussing whether to determine them through seeding or via a bracket. In addition, the return to play committee is still discussing the lengths of the first and second round series and whether the second round matchups will be determined through seeding or via bracket. In any scenario, the conference finals and Stanley Cup final will be best of seven. The sites of the conference finals and Stanley Cup final remain to be determined, although based on what we know today, we expect those series to be played in one of the two hub cities. We believe we can get the qualifying and first two rounds of the playoffs completed in little over a month. In the Eastern Conference, the top four teams by points percentage at the time of the pause who will play round-robin games to determine their playoff seeding are the Boston Bruins, the Tampa Bay Lightning, the Washington Capitals, and the Philadelphia Flyers. The qualifying round series matchups in the Eastern Conference are as follows. Number 5 Pittsburgh Penguins versus number 12 Montreal Canadiens. Number 6 Carolina Hurricanes versus number 11 New York Rangers. Number 7 New York Islanders versus number 10 Florida Panthers. And number 8 Toronto Maple Leafs versus number 9 Columbus Blue Jackets. In the Western Conference, the top four teams by points percentage at the time of the pause who will play round-robin games to determine their playoff seeding are the St. Louis Blues, the Colorado Avalanche, the Vegas Golden Knights, and the Dallas Stars. The qualifying round series matchups in the Western Conference are as follows. Number 5 Edmonton Oilers versus number 12 Chicago Blackhawks. Number 6 Nashville Predators versus number 11 Arizona Coyotes. Number 7 Vancouver Canucks versus number 10 Minnesota Wild. And number 8 Calgary Flames versus number 9 Winnipeg Jets. Now, to the 2020 NHL draft lottery. This is a bit complicated, as if what I've already told you hasn't been, and I apologize for that. The draft lottery will determine which clubs make the first three selections in the 2020 NHL draft, and it will be conducted in one or two phases, depending upon the results of the various draws. The seven clubs that did not resume play and the eight qualifying round clubs that do not advance into the playoffs will enter the draft lottery. At the time of the first phase draws, we won't know which eight teams won't advance from the qualifying round. So we have designated temporary placeholders with the odds that the collective group would have had. Phase one draws will be conducted on June 26th prior to the round robins and qualifying round. There will be three separate draws to determine which clubs possess the first, second, and third overall selections in the 2020 NHL draft. Each will include the seven non-resuming clubs and eight placeholder teams that have not yet won a draw. If any draw is won by one of the seven non-resuming teams, that club or the club to which that first round pick was traded gets that selection. If all three draws are won by non-resuming clubs, there will be no need for a phase two. Should any of the three draws not be won by a non-resuming club, we will conduct a phase two before the conference quarterfinals. At that point, the assignment of the remaining top three selections will be determined through draws, including only the qualifying round clubs that fail to advance. For any and all phase two draws, all teams involved will have the same odds of winning. Once the top three selections are determined, all remaining clubs will be slotted in reverse order of their 2019-20 points percentage. Let me give you some explanation. The format was adopted in order to maintain the distribution of lottery winning odds that were in place entering the 2019-20 season. In other words, teams that do not resume play have the same odds of claiming one of the top three selections as they would have had if the 2019-20 schedule had been completed. You can see those odds here. As previously stated, all clubs involved in any phase two draw as a group will have the same odds of winning. For a possible first of such draws, each club would have 12.5% chance of winning, 1-8, which means each of the losing clubs in the qualifying round would have, in effect, a 3% chance of winning the first overall pick. Obviously, these are extraordinary and unprecedented times. Any plan for the resumption of play, by definition, cannot be perfect. And I am certain that depending on which team you root for, you can find some element of this package that you might prefer to be done differently. But we believe we have constructed an overall plan that includes all teams that, as a practical matter, might have had a chance of qualifying for the playoffs when the season was paused. And this plan will produce a worthy Stanley Cup champion who will have run the postseason gauntlet that is unique to the NHL. Let me reiterate, while we are hopeful, it is our goal that we will be able to resume play and award the Stanley Cup. We intend to do so within a time frame that will enable us to get back to a full calendar for the 2021 season. At the same time, we remain focused on the safety of our players, coaches, support staff, and arena personnel. We will not set dates, choose sites, or begin to play until we know it is appropriate and prudent and are approved to do so. As we seek some return to normalcy, this is an important day, particularly for NHL fans. Since March 12th, we have been hopeful and optimistic that by developing all options and alternatives, we could get to this point. I know I join sports fans everywhere when we say We cannot wait for our players to hit the ice again. And I look forward to the greatest privilege of all, presenting the most storied and coveted trophy in all of sports to the captain of the 2019-20 Stanley Cup champions. Thank you.
All right, there he was, Gary Bettman, discussing the NHL's return to play proposal. And, of course, the other part of it that we didn't really discuss that Gary just got into was the draft lottery for the teams that will not be involved. And obviously understanding there's going to be a considerable amount of layoff but for the teams that do not make the postseason to the start of the next season. It's going to be an interesting fluid time here for the NHL. Let me ask you something. Are you surprised, Tyler? I am. Are you surprised that with everything that's going on, three Canadian cities are being considered as these hub cities for the NHL?
I am. And I think we've talked about this a little bit before. The borders, as I understand them, have been shut down for now, correct?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
So
yeah.
I guess that they are under the pretense that it's going to be, they will be reopened borders at some point. My thought being with how that this is centralized, that they're going with hub cities as opposed to, you know, a Disney World or a Las Vegas like the NBA is considering, you would assume that it would be in one of the centralized cities. And I guess that is me saying that it's probably would centralized, meaning somewhere in the United States would make sense.
Right.
But I had just assumed that Chicago would probably be one of them.
Yep.
Minneapolis would make sense as well, kind of logistically. I'm actually kind of surprised that it is three Canadian cities.
Yeah, me too. It's like I'm looking at geography, and you're right, Minneapolis would make sense. I'm trying to think if you did something like this, where even though Chicago is a Western Conference city, in the interest of keeping people away from their home arenas or whatever, you did something like the East plays in Chicago and the West plays in Pittsburgh or Columbus or something, so that whenever you work out whoever the playoff teams are, it's a short trip, and also you don't have any like home ice advantage or whatever. I'm wondering about that. Like Dallas is involved. They're bottom four. They're the fourth team in the round robin. Can Dallas be a site? Like, can that, it's listed as one. Could that actually in practice happen? I don't know if that's fair relative to something else, unless the Stars are not going to be playing there.
Right. I think that there are only, quite honestly, at this point, I think there's only three logistical cities, maybe four, I guess, that wouldn't work in terms of where everybody's located. And it's my assumption would be it's up in the Pacific Northwest, it's Vancouver and Calgary.
Yep.
You go down to Florida, and it can't be where the Panthers play.
Right.
And it can't be Tampa Bay. Other than that, and I guess maybe Boston too, but other than that, I think that every city should be in play from a geographical standpoint.
And so this is the ESPN article's deal talking about the Canadian government has a mandatory 14-day quarantine that could force the NHL to pick two U.S. locales. Here's what Bill Daly said. The interpretation of the quarantine consistent with our players' ability to travel in and not have to do a strict self-quarantine in a hotel room, we won't be in a position to use any of the Canadian cities as a hub city. We're faced at with finding a solution, having to find a solution to that, hopefully we can. Now, that's what the information is now. Who knows what the information is in the future? But obviously, these are things that Gary Bettman, Bill Daly, the NHL is all trying to work out. The draft lottery determines the top three picks in the draft. Seven teams that are not in the play-in round and the eight teams eliminated in the qualifying round are eligible to win the draft lottery. Two possible phases. Pre-qualification, post-qualification. I'm curious how that works. Well, here are the details. Three separate draws to determine who earns the first, second, and third. Right now, the teams that did make the qualifying round, Detroit, Ottawa, San Jose, and Ottawa owns the San Jose pick. Los Angeles, Anaheim, New Jersey, and Buffalo and 8 placeholder spots for teams that are in the qualification.
So there is a very real possibility. Now, it's I guess you would do 12.5% times 12.5%, so it's not a great number, but there is a less or a more than it's a non-zero chance that Ottawa could be the first and second pick in the draft.
Yes. Detroit has the best chance at 18.5, but Ottawa has the second and third best chances.
Yeah. So it's 12.5 and
it's 13.5 and 11.5.
Okay, so it would be the same difference.
Yeah,
you
same
12.5,
yep.
Average 12.5. That's a pretty good substantial chance of at least landing the top pick.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, and I know the NHL is different. How far can you fall? Because I know in the NBA there's a safe fail that if you have the top percentage of picks, you can only fall to 4, I think.
Yeah, there's not a
there isn't one in the NHL?
In the NHL, no, I don't think so. Not that I'm aware of. If the draw is won by any of the non-resuming teams, that team gets the selection. If all 3 top picks go to the non-resuming teams, there wouldn't be a second draw. However, if any of the placeholder spots wins a lottery for a top 3 pick, there will be a second lottery after the qualification round to determine which eliminated team gets the draft pick. After the top 3 picks are determined, all remaining teams will be slotted through points percentage. So that might answer that question.
Okay.
So, like, Detroit could be no worse than 4th, I believe.
So that safe fail isn't there?
Effectively, yeah. It's slotted through points percentage. I didn't know that existed.
So the year that the Flyers ended up with the number 2 pick.
Yeah.
Someone fell dramatically, didn't they?
The James Van Riemsdyk?
No. The year they ended up with Nolan Patrick.
Oh, the Nolan Patrick.
Yeah.
Okay.
Somebody fell significant because they had like the 9th or 10th worst record, didn't they? They moved up a ton.
I have to go back and look at that. I can't remember. I'll have Tyler crunch those numbers, and we'll bring them to you. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. Joe Torty Show. We're hanging out until 10 right here on The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Yes. Welcome back. Joe Torty Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Tyler Zuli producing the program. So we're hanging out together until 10 o'clock. Let me ask you this. I know that it was no new information, but the Gary Bettman press conference, to me, that seemed like it was more of a let's, you know, get the ball back rolling rather than having a fully fleshed out plan that obviously we're going to make available to everyone. But my question has been from the beginning, there has to be more. Like, I would assume that you're not going to hear the entire details, the full details of everything. Like, for example, the situation that we had talked about earlier in the event of a positive test or whatever.
Right.
Until you cross that bridge. There's a couple of reasons for that. One, it's uncomfortable. Like, it is, in my opinion, on both sides. If you're some of the players who have voted to say, yeah, we're going to take the risk, or a league that is making a proposal that says, hey, let's take the risk. Unless there is an actual case where you have to put your money where your mouth is and move forward, there probably isn't a reason for the public to know that that's what you're going to do, especially in some of these metropolitan cities that don't feel the same as, say, like someone in the Midwest about this whole thing, right? So, like, I get that. I get the details are sparse right now, but there will have to be details at some point hammered out, whether we ever know them or not.
I think so, and I think that the leagues are probably keeping their cards close to their chest just for that particular reason, and it's kind of that almost cliche, we'll, you know, cross that bridge when we get to it type thing.
Yeah.
I don't know how much that they... And again, I don't know how much they're holding, you know, how much they kept to themselves, how much, like, I know we've been talking in cliches and metaphors all night, so might as well keep it going. Yeah, like, you don't know how much iceberg's left below the surface, right?
Right, yeah.
Like, you see what you see, but, I mean, they may potentially have a lot left. They may potentially just have some minute details to work out.
Right, yeah. Now, the truth is, too, that as much planning as we would hope would happen, I don't know that you can plan for every possible contingency. And sometimes you have to be able to come up with things as more details emerge. I'm assuming that something like that will happen at some point to the NHL, to the NBA, Major League Baseball, the NFL, especially the NFL, who there are a lot of smart people that work for the NFL, but the impression that I have now is kind of like an expecting and hoping for the best kind of deal at the same exact time, which is what makes me wonder whether that is a realistic way of looking at this whole situation. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to hop aboard the conversation. On Twitter, it's at Joe Torti and at 97.5 The Fanatic. I do also wonder now, if you are a team like the Devils, or you're a team like, any of the teams that did not make the playoffs today, what do you make of the proposal? Obviously, it was 29-2 overwhelmingly voted for in favor. If you're one of those draft lottery teams, you probably didn't want the chance to hurt your draft picks if you weren't going to make the playoffs anyway, or your draft prospects if you weren't going to make the playoffs anyway.
Right. I think that this is exactly what they were hoping for. I mean, you expanded from 16 teams to 24 teams. You up that by 50%. If your team is still not one of the 7 teams out of 31 that are going to make the playoffs, you stunk anyway. You were playing for a lottery pick. And quite honestly now, I know that the percentages are going to even themselves out once those 8 teams get eliminated and fill those filler spots. But I don't know if, just on the surface, if you're a fan of the Red Wings or the Devils, right, or anything like that,
if you wanted more games,
you're going to think of, if you're a fan of those particular teams, you're going to almost feel like you've got a better chance at the number one overall pick.
Sure.
Statistically, you're not going to when it's all said and done, but you're going to feel like you do for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's the truth. Plus, I mean, here's the thing, too, is that this is not necessarily, the NBA and the NHL share common ground here, where we've seen 8 seeds make a run. We've seen teams that are far down in terms of the bracket seedings make runs. How deep, though? Are 10 seeds or 12 seeds or 15 seeds going to make runs in the playoffs? Like you said, Tyler, probably not. There's probably not going to be a team that's a 14 seed that's going to be a real cup contender or a real NBA finals contender. That is my one thing where I'm looking at, why are all of these teams in the playoffs? And I get that it's tough to please everyone because you have some teams that are hard charging. By the way, the correct answer, people are saying the Flyers, which is not true, I don't think. But of the teams that are playing in the round robin, which one do you want to play? It's Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is stunk at the end of the season. They've got all kinds of playoff baggage and stuff like that. Tampa Bay was sliding the exact wrong way. Now, the question is, are the Flyers going to be able to stay hot like they were at the end of this? Or is Tampa Bay going to be able to put the pedal to the metal? To me, I'd rather take my chances with the team that was sliding, regardless of whether they get a chance to restart, versus like the Flyers.
Well, and that's where I have a tough time trying to make that decision, because mm-hmm. I look at the rosters of these top 4 teams from top to bottom, just strictly on talent. I don't know if the Flyers compare. They definitely don't compare to Boston. I don't know if they compare to Washington or Tampa Bay. I don't know if the Flyers will have some kind of, they'll continue to have that young mentality, almost of like, we don't know what we don't know, and continue to roll. It's a possibility.
Yeah.
It's also a possibility that everything, the top and the bottom, come back together and the Flyers are just a good team. Because that's what we all thought they were going to be heading into the season, right? Was a good team, making their way up.
Pretty good.
Yeah. They obviously outperformed all of our expectations, and now they've got a chance. Now they're going to have a bye in the first round because of it, which is great. But I don't necessarily know that if you gave me a choice, when it comes to strictly talent alone if I'm going to take Washington or I'm going to take Tampa Bay before I take the Flyers.
Well, so here's the truth. They were playing, regardless of what you think of the roster, they were playing and behaving as Stanley Cup contending teams play and behave, right? Like, that's what the Flyers
exactly.
Were. Tyrone brought it up on Mike's show this afternoon that I think is absolutely dead on the money. There are some teams, I would say Washington's one of these teams that has the pedigree. Pittsburgh has more pedigree than anybody else. I think that there are some teams that, based on their playoff experience, their veteran leadership, as opposed to the Flyers being a younger, ascending team, that are going to be more ready from Jump Street. So that's what I think of when I look at it, like, all of it. When I think about everything, that's what it is. It's which teams will be able to put the pedal to the metal. In a round-robin setting, are the Flyers good enough to out-talent teams as they're knocking the rust off? The one thing that I do know that has been a boon to the Flyers is Alain Vigneault. Tyler, you and I have talked about this. Alain Vigneault in year one with a new team has them ready to go. So I would assume after a hiatus, the same tricks work. I would assume that Alain Vigneault
is still year
ready
one
to go. Yes, exactly.
And that's kind of why I go back and forth on how far I think the Flyers can make it in this particular setup. I go back to, are they the most talented of those four teams that get a bye? Probably not. Are they one of the most well-coached?
Mm.
Definitely.
Yeah, I think so, too. And that is an advantage that not every team has. I think that there are more good NHL coaches than people give credit. Like, I think that there's a couple bad ones that get weeded out every year. Otherwise, there are really great coaches and then a bunch of people that are pretty good. But the Flyers have one of the best head coaching situations in the NHL at this point. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. Also, this conversation kind of slid by the wayside as the NHL stuff took shape. But something in Philly sports that everybody seems to like that you don't. Tyler talked about the Kelly Green jerseys. I talked about in the 93 Phillies. I talked about the 01 Sixers. Kind of in the same vein. You know, we're in lockstep there. It's two sides of the same coin, the 93 Phillies and the 01 Sixers. What I said earlier, that this year's Sixers team or last year's team, both better than the 0-1 Sixers. Do you think people would push back on that, or do you think that people would accept that?
I think that people would initially push back on it. If you take a step back and look at just the roster construction and the talent of this year's team and last year's team, I don't know. I thought last year's team was probably better than this year's team.
I think so, too. I agree.
Even though that Shake Milton clearly was better. Furkan was clearly better, but you lose Redick, that hurts.
Butler.
You lose Butler, that hurts. Al Horford was obviously not a good fit or an acquisition. So, but I think that either of these two teams were more talented than the 2001 team. I mean, we legitimately talked about it earlier. Allen Iverson not only carried a team to the finals, he carried his injured, battered, bruised own body into the finals and yep. still played the way that he did, because they were battle tested by the time they got to that series.
Yes, they were. There's no doubt. And ground conceded. All right. I'm willing to extend the olive branch. Iverson, best player on any of those teams.
Correct.
Better than Butler, better than Simmons, better than. Fine. No problem. Teams are better. You want George Lynch or Eric Snow, with all due respect to these guys? Or Dikembe Mutombo? No.
Embiid would have a field day with Mutombo.
Literally would eat him alive. Not unlike Shaq. Not unlike what Shaq did.
Love Dikembe Mutombo.
Yes.
The fact that he helped provide anything midway through a season.
It should have fallen apart when Ratliff got hurt.
Right.
The whole thing should have been done.
He was a huge help.
Yeah.
There is no doubt in my mind that Joel Embiid would score 35 a night.
610-632-0975. Not unlike Shaq. Once again.
Nobody covering that guy.
No. It is the Joe Torty Show. We are hanging out until 10 o'clock. Final segment is coming your way next. So we'll take a walk around the show. Squeeze in a couple more phone calls. We have time. 610-632-0975. Plus one more thing. All of that is coming your way. Tyler Zuli's producing. It's been a fun show, Tyler.
It really has.
I'm going to bring it home. And we're going to also look at some of the other finer points to the Mark Cuban proposal as well for the NBA. So lots of good stuff going on. It is the Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back, Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. As we said, it's been a fun show. It's been a strange show, as is most of sports quarantine. So thanks everybody for bearing with us so far. The Mark Cuban proposal. I didn't ask you about this, Tyler. Long story short, you've got like a play-in scenario where all but two teams are still alive, and you've got effectively like a first group that has to play to make the main playoff field. The reason for doing this is that you're trying to get more teams involved to fulfill local television contracts. You're trying to get the top 10 teams from every conference or both conferences to qualify for the postseason and be reseeded. Effectively, you'd also see them play 5 to 7 regular season games before this tournament. That's the Mark Cuban plan, not necessarily the NBA plan. Does this hold any kind of weight with you at all?
I don't think it can.
Okay.
And again, it goes back to that conversation earlier that we had, where the NBA is probably the single greatest sport when it comes to one or two players dominating the game and taking over the game. I get that the play-in game is supposed to be a deterrent because you're going to have played a game or two games or three games before you even get to the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
But this isn't baseball where you've got one ace and a couple of other guys where you're using your ace in the wild card game, and that's a huge deterrent because you got to go to number two versus the other team's number one.
Right.
When you're playing these play-in games, assuming that nobody gets hurt or it re-injures themselves, I just continually go back to the Golden State Warriors, where those two could win you a couple rounds, and then all of a sudden you see them in the I don't know if it's Western and Eastern, but you see them in the some sort of semifinals.
Right.
Brooklyn the same way. If Kevin Durant could play and Kyrie Irving got healthy, who knows what could potentially happen in the NBA. I just can't allow that to happen. Whereas again, in the NHL, it's far less likely that a return to injury is going to spark a run from one of these lower tier teams.
610-632-0975. By the way, who did you jack the drive-in movie theater idea from? Or the drive-in games?
I saw it on Twitter. I can't take credit for it.
Uh-huh.
I'd have to go back and try to find it.
You're getting kudos. People like the idea. So as far as I'm concerned, you should just own that.
Well,
I'll
take it until we find out who it was.
Okay. All right. You'll keep it warm. Sounds good. And then, of course, you've got Major League Baseball, the reports coming out about the salary haircuts that some of the top players would be asked to take. That if that is the deal, which I assume that it is not, if that is the deal, then there's not going to be baseball. And Lance called and pointed it out earlier that would be an issue. We talked about this too. If that is the actual deal, then it's not going to happen. However, I would anticipate that there's going to be a considerable amount of back and forth that will continue. And, something's going to happen there. I feel like there's too much money for all parties involved in all professional sports for there to absolutely have nothing happen. Will they? Who knows, like, how soon that'll be? I don't know if there's any kind of deadline. As I said earlier, I think that any number of games, any number of televised events, eventually you'll find a way to make something happen. But a full-on cancellation, I would be incredibly surprised if that were the case. Then again, as I pointed out, I'd be incredibly surprised to see Joe Flacco signing with any team, and then he does, and then after he signs, announces that he won't be ready for week one after neck surgery, which we already knew. Because 2020 is just peak Twilight Zone season. By the way, you did not fight back against my assertion that Joe Flacco outperformed himself more in that postseason than any quarterback. So that, I expected some people to tweet in and say Nick Foles. That has not happened because Nick Foles had the clunker Atlanta game.
Nick Foles had a terrible first three quarters against it, maybe even a bad game, and then came out and obviously, you know, they were throwing the ball all over the yard against the Vikings.
Right.
But quite honestly, too, I mean, even in the first couple of, I guess it was only the first, what was it, two drives that they struggled and then had the Patrick Robinson interception.
Yeah.
So I guess it really wasn't a first quarter, but he wasn't great. I mean, Joe Flacco, for what it's worth, played like an elite-level quarterback for four games. And I think went up to Foxborough to beat the Patriots that season, I believe. Beat a good 49ers team in the Super Bowl, where the, you know, the talk of the town obviously was the was Colin Kaepernick taking over the league and nobody able to stop him.
And then the lights went out.
Right. I mean, it was a weird game, and the Ravens defense played well, but you know, Joe Flacco was an elite level quarterback for 16 quarters.
Yeah.
The most important 16 quarters of his career, and he made a ton of money off of it.
I don't know if he was good enough in the Super Bowl to win the Super Bowl MVP.
I mean, quarterbacks win.
That was totally Jacoby Jones. 100%, I thought, during the Super Bowl. I thought that he made the biggest difference.
I'd have to go back and take a look.
Uh-huh.
Okay. To see if... I don't want to tell you you're wrong. I don't want to tell you you're right.
Joe Flacco in the Super Bowl went 22 of 33 for 287 yards and three touchdowns.
Numbers-wise, that'll do it.
That will do it?
I mean, okay. I think so.
All right.
It may not be the biggest impact, but numbers-wise, three touchdowns will do it for you.
Okay. All right.
I mean, we are under Madden pretense at this point. Like, if your quarterback throws a touchdown, he's winning the Super Bowl MVP.
That's it. That is the truth. The other thing that I think goes in Flacco's favor in this argument is that the Eagles are the best team in the league and the Ravens definitely weren't. Joe Flacco did an AI-type situation. Not saying that the Ravens were as bad as the 0-1 Sixers were post-Ratliff injury, but the Eagles were way better. Way, way, way better than the Ravens were that year when they won the Super Bowl. So that is a kudos given to Joe Flacco. Not my favorite quarterback of all time, but there you go.
You're a Joe Flacco hater.
I am. Yeah, objectively, I am. When I heard people talk about him being elite, It drove me insane. There were people on the station that were talking about how good Joe Flacco is. I'm like, do you think his family's listening and that's why?
I mean, like, Joe Flacco has the ring, right? And the numbers in that postseason.
Uh-huh.
But there are a ton of quarterbacks that I don't value very highly that are significantly better than Joe Flacco. And the two that come to mind are Matt Ryan and Matt Stafford.
Both better.
Both way better than Joe Flacco.
I don't even like Matt Ryan.
I don't like either of them, and they're way better. Dak Prescott is better than Joe Flacco.
Oh, get him.
At his prime, of course. Now, obviously, that's a given now. Because you might be better than Joe Flacco at this point. I might be better than Joe Flacco at this point.
Well, until his neck heals. Yeah, I think that's fair enough. All right, here we go. It's time for the often imitated, never duplicated, the one, the only, one more thing.
But there is one more thing.
In another sign that, you know, slowly but surely, if we don't get outside, our homes will slowly eat us and destroy us. The singer Halsey revealed that she broke her ankle loading the dishwasher in her home earlier today. She fractured her ankle after slipping on the wet floor in her kitchen. She's now waddling around like a penguin. Okay, so I have injured myself in an insane way. I've told you this before. I tore my knee up when I was dancing at a wedding. However, I have not yet been injured by a household appliance. First of all, I hope that Halsey's okay and that she hasn't actually broken her ankle. But if she has, I hope that she has a speedy recovery. Slipping on the wet floor in your kitchen, you broke your ankle. What in the world happened here?
Why was the floor that wet?
Right, what happened?
That it forced a broken ankle.
She said, I was doing okay till I broke two toes on the other foot. So now I have a cast on the left foot and two broken toes on the right foot. I'm waddling like a penguin. What? That is... what she said, I tripped over the open dishwasher door because the kitchen floor was wet while I was loading the dishes and slammed my ankle bone into the metal and fractured it. Ow! First of all. But what else could happen to you around your house if this is a possibility, right? Like, why is the floor wet? Unless she's a responsible citizen and pre-washes the dishes, like gives them the pre-rinse before loading them into the dishwasher.
Nah, it's a waste of water.
I've seen some savage. You're probably one of them.
Oh, absolutely.
The full macaroni and cheese plate into the dishwasher.
The only thing that happens is it will get a like a soak, like a rinse.
Yeah.
But I'm not washing the dish before I put it in the dishwasher. That's the only responsibility of said dishwasher.
Let me ask you the question now. You're a soaker.
Yes.
Do you do that so that you don't have to put it in the dishwasher?
No.
Or do you do it if the dishwasher's clean and it hasn't been emptied yet? What is your purpose for soaking the dish? Why do you do this?
I don't know. Maybe it's just an in-my-head thing.
Okay.
But I believe that if you put the dish detergent or the soap or whatever you use to clean your pans, like if you have a scrub brush or something, if you put that in there with hot water, it's going to break stuff up.
Okay.
And then you dump it out, some of the stuff leaves, and then you got an easier time in the dishwasher.
All right, All right, so you do, in some cases, you do the pre-wash thing.
But I'm not washing it by hand. Like, I'm not scrubbing it.
No. But you'll do the rinse before you put it in.
Yeah, okay, yes, I'll do that.
All right. I'm just checking, because I know there are some people that literally things go from the dinner table to the dishwasher. And I'm like, you're trying to break your dishwasher.
I mean, when I put plates in, yeah. But, like, if there's we just made... I don't know. Like you said, macaroni and cheese. We just made tacos. Because taco seasoning will stain very easily. Something like that.
All right.
Makes sense.
All right. That's going to just about wrap things up for the program today. I had a fun time talking to all of you. I'm sorry for those on the line didn't get to you. We'll try to get to you next time. For Tyler Zuli. Tyler, this is fun. Outstanding job producing. Thank you very much for your hard work. This is the Joe Torti Show signing off. Thanks to everybody who called and tweeted in. I will talk to you on Thursday right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.